All right. It's the 14th of November, 2022. And it is our final official beta module class. You are all the first cohort of experimenters. I don't know if that's the right word, but we've been experimenting, right, with beta. You all know that this has been a trial to see how we do this online, the work, some of my concepts, obviously concepts from my predecessors, the support that we have. It's been all a bit of an experiment. I have had a good time watching everything unfold. I have a sense you have all learned at least one thing, if not more. And the housekeeping notes I want to mention, it really will mean a ton for myself and team when we send you the survey. I know surveys sometimes suck and you got to sit at your computer, but if you could please treat it like a lesson in neurosensory exercise, really get into the questions, write, think about things, feel, do not hold back. I want critique. We need criticism, right? So don't be afraid to hurt my feelings. It won't happen. Just give us what you really would love, what you liked, what you didn't like. Give us those things. Sound good? Please. Thank you. Okay. And then for those that didn't book a time with Annalisa to just give extra feedback that maybe can't happen on a written survey, or you would just like to speak out something that you'd like to share, she still has some slots in December. Go through, you have the link, we sent it to you, but if you can't find it, send Bonnie an email and she'll get that to you. And then final thing, if you would like to join the beta bonus, the bonus sessions we're doing end of November and into December, there's three of them, same time, for about an hour, give or take 15 minutes. There's still some space. So you're still all welcome if you haven't done that and now you know you can. Again, please, you have to sign up. So we really need you to sign up. So do that again through Bonnie. You can email her directly, bonnie@irenelyon.com, or just support will also get to her. So those are the three things I wanted to mention. Yeah. Cool. I want to start, let's start by hearing from the four folk. It's the four ladies. We've got Shyla, Rebecca, Tamar, and Jen, who haven't shared a little tidbit of life over the last seven or so weeks. So if one of you is ready to unmute and give a little update, a little something, that'd be great.
I can share.
Thanks.
I've just been noticing over the past, I don't know if it's in conjunction with this course or not, probably is, but that there seems to be like a lift in the energy, and it could just be me and I'm just saying the energy, but I'm noticing just a lift. Not that this year has been a struggle, but I think there was an element of that I wasn't aware of. I was just, mm-hmm. Moving forward. I feel like we've been through a few things just, as a global community, mm-hmm. and you live and you move forward and you keep going because that's what you do. But it feels like this past few weeks, I've just felt like this lifting of that or this like sloughing off of that, mm-hmm. And like more space and more freedom, like, back to before it was all that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are you finding that work or just generally every place of life, Shyla?
I would say everything, like okay. Even movement, like going for a walk was something I would always do, mm-hmm. but I'm noticing it's like there was this extra layer of hardship that was on that through the past couple of years that I wasn't aware of because you just keep going and maybe you notice that it's hard and you have a cry and you keep going, but then when it's actually lifted, it just feels like, oh. Like I have my whole system back,
Yeah. Thank you. I feel what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
there's been a lot of stress, even if we've been in a good place the last couple of years. So I think we're all slowly moving through and out. So thanks for sharing that. Thank you. All right. Jen, Rebecca, Tamar. Don't all speak at once.
I'll share.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. It's been really wonderful being through this program with all of you. And something I'll share about my journey, something I'm learning in my life, in my nervous system, is I am continuing to learn how to face uncomfortable, maybe sometimes intense emotions. So how is that showing up? So recently, I got into an argument with my boyfriend. And I don't argue very often, but it happens. We're human. And I notice a pattern in myself when there is argument is that I'll tend to people please or bite my tongue or suppress my emotions or my perspective. And I think I do this because I want the person to like me. It's raw, but yeah, I want them to like me. And that feels very connected to survival. Oh. And of our communication that I'm not jiving with. And I was frustrated.
You had a delay tomorrow.
Okay. There's a delay. Darn it.
You're back
okay.
though.
Should I? I'm back. Okay. So I spoke my frustration. Mm-hmm. I stayed with my frustration and it was okay. Mm. And we were cooking dinner. And wasn't the best time to speak frustration and talk about things that aren't that I don't like, but it came up and I was like, fuck it. This is what I'm feeling. And this is the time because it's up. And so I created some waves. Hmm. And how I knew that I was able to confront my difficult emotion, but somehow stay more contained within it was usually when that happens, that would wreck my appetite. I would not be hungry anymore. I'd feel adrenaline through my system. My tummy would be churning and I'd be just buzzing. I was buzzing, but I felt more contained. And we sat down for dinner and I was hungry and I ate and it felt good. And once I ate and I was nourished and time went on, I was like, oh, we love each other. Couples argue. It's okay to be frustrated. And we've been getting along really well since then. Mm. So I'm really grateful that I'm learning how to feel my feelings and continue to learn how to contain them so that, yeah, I can, you know, harness it and grow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've got a good guy.
Yeah.
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 Thank you. That was actually going to be something I brought up today. So you just read my mind.
Oh,
and
cool.
I'll just say it right now and then we'll get to the next two folk. Seth and I were talking, you all know Seth, my husband, colleague, about how we used to do a lot of fucking therapy. Like we had a session probably twice a month for a couple of years, with a master. I'm happy to share Ian McNaughton. Some of you know him. He's one of Peter Levine's best friends and he just so happens to live in Vancouver. He's close to retirement. So we got in at the right time and there was a moment in that and then where I thought, my God, how will we keep living if we have to see a therapist this many times a year? It's a lot of time. And, but it was almost like we had to do a concentrated amount of work because we knew we liked each other. Mm-hmm. And I want to put that out because I saw in trainings, those who really struggled and had a hard time finding their ground who were in relationship. Usually it was a marriage typically, but a long-term relationship. Those who struggled or were struggling to take the work in and really live it didn't have a relationship that was able to allow them to do this work in relationship. Mm-hmm. And what I often would hear is, oh yes. And usually it was my husband, but you know, it can go both ways. Usually it was, yeah, my partner supports me. But what I often found was it wasn't that they supported that person in being connected at the nervous system level. It was mainly a support of finance and a support of, yeah, you can leave for a week. I support that. But there was no connection of living this work together. Now, this is just my suggestion. I know some of you are in relationships, some of you aren't, you know, so for those who aren't, it's kind of an interesting place because now you have a different barometer for how to know what is right and not right for you. And there is something about being able to do this work with a partner. It doesn't mean that they have to be doing this work as a profession. That's not important, but that you can be frustrated at dinner and bring it up and they're not going to think whatever, you know, they take it in, they feel it, they know it. So I just can't speak to that highly enough. It is important. And that's for your immediate partner. This isn't the case for parents or siblings or people that you don't live with. It's the people that you live with, the person you live with. You really want to have that support. So thanks, Tamar, for bringing that up because we were talking about it the other night and we very rarely fight. We get into arguments, but we haven't needed to go get help because we've learned how to help the relationship when there is a crack or a creak mm-hmm. or a wrench is thrown into the spokes, so to speak. I'm sure some of you have experienced this in many ways in your relationships too. So, all right.
Thank you.
Jen, you're welcome. Jen and Rebecca.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey. So I'm in the car. Does it sound okay?
Yeah.
Okay. My share is just about feeling that my work is more enriched. I think that's just a continual process, but definitely since doing the program. And moments of just the feeling and a recognition that I know what I'm doing. And I've been like studying and like chasing after studying for so many years. And it's not that I don't want to keep learning, especially with you, but just to really feel that feels very adult. It feels like, okay, I'm allowed to feel that mm-hmm. because some of that is some of my like developmental trauma, like to not feel that, like I always have to analyze or second guess myself. So just feel that feels really good to be. Yeah, I'm in my work. I'm in my career. I have a lot of training under my belt, and to feel confident in that, in like just really in my body and in my cool. mind for sure. Yeah.
There's like it almost sounds like Rebecca, there's like a level of mastery that you feel like you've reached one of the levels of mastery. We yeah. want to say, yeah.
And wanting and continuing, but just not that like comparing it to how I was like, well, I'm going to get through that training and get through that training. And I even had a conversation. There's going to be a Feldenkrais training in Michigan and they've been contacting me about coming there. And so I had a conversation about what is it going to take to be an assistant trainer? Because the Feldenkrais world does not make that easy, mm-mm. as you know. And I'm very honest with them about it. I'm like, you guys are not all going to be alive forever that studied with Moshe. So what are you doing to make this? Anyway, we had a good conversation about it. But part of it was if I do decide to go through with it, they're going to observe me and speculate. Decide if I'm skillful enough. And I hear that because it felt a little, you know, we'll see what happens.
You broke up a little bit. I think your excitement got the field a little, it cracked it a bit, but I get what you're saying. So the gist of it is that the next step or isn't it? It would be the question about assisting and becoming an assistant. Oh. I'm going to give her a timeout. Jen, you're up next. Rebecca, your connection's going funny.
I was just, Yeah.
It's still a little wonky. We'll continue this conversation. Okay. Miss Greer, where are you?
So first, I just want to acknowledge the light's not the best. There's not really a great place. There's so many windows that there's not a great place to be comfortable and not be backlit. So
I can see you.
Okay. So I don't have like a neat and tidy update. Like it feels like there's been a lot of like very clear, this is what's happened. And I don't feel like I have that. I've been really aware of how being in Zoom groups is really activating for me. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working with that. And I feel like I'm more aware of, there's been these layers of mess I've worked with over time. When I think of this work, I feel like, okay, I used to react at a 10 and then a 9 and then an 8, right? And so I feel like there's still this like mess that happens. And when I say mess, I think it's like a number of responses that happen at once, kind of, or they're very closely connected. And so I've been aware of that, like, I think it's happening even now is what makes, contributes to that sort of response, just in different situations, but being able to, I don't feel like I'd like to be sort of where like, and I've navigated it. And now I just sort of feel very peaceful and easy.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm more like, in the process of that, like it's quieter, it's more manageable, it's more navigable, but there's still some messiness and challenge in it.
That's cool.
And a kind of a cool little story just to kind of.
Yeah.
And is that I can't do some of the things I used to do that would take me into nature and let me move my activation, like hike and bike. And so I've been finding places in nature where I can be quieter and just sit. And I went to this nature center and they had, it's an educational. So they have things in cages, which I have mixed feelings about, but it is what it is, but they had a bunch of snakes. And I used to be really freaked out by snakes. And if I were out on my own, I probably still would be. But I just sat there and I like sat down and there was this big snake, right? And it just kind of like came up to me. And it was so cool to kind of like play with it. And also because I'm starting to study Feldenkrais to sort of, it's so long, and to watch like its body and how like it could move like this. It's like heavy, right? Mm-hmm. And it could move like a foot or 2 feet of itself and the tail stayed stationary. Right. Yeah. And so just to sort of watch how it moved. But I noticed like, there's no way I would have done that in the past. Right. Where I was actually like kind of there and curious and interested instead of being sort of like freaked out and scared. So that was cool to notice.
That is cool. Yeah. Snakes they're an interesting animal.
Well, there's one in this place where I'm hanging out. So I've had, it's a boa. So I've had,
okay. I've
had like 15 years to get used to it being in a space that I frequent, So, but I don't actually, that one, he sleeps a lot.
Yeah.
We don't actually engage with him in this way that I was able to engage with this other snake.
Oh, wow. Thanks for sharing that. I held a snake for the first time 2 years ago, and it took me a lot of energy to muster doing that. And I'm not afraid of many things. And I'm like, okay, that's enough. And I had to give it back to the person. I literally was waiting for it to like swallow me, although that's completely not possible. But yeah, thank you. I can't believe you have a boa in the place that you frequent. So that's interesting.
Yeah, but it's he's not very, right?
They're very high tone dorsal, those reptiles. Oh man, thank you. Thank you for all your shares. It's super fun to hear what's going on. I've had so many interesting things pop up, and I might share some things as we go today. But what I wanted to do is, first of all, say thank you for all the practicum recordings that are popping in. I know some of you still have to get those to us. We noticed that some of them were audio only, and if that's what came out of your recording, that's fine. But Bonnie might check with you just in case there's a video file floating around somewhere on the cloud or on your computer that you didn't catch. Not a problem if it's not video, but we just might follow up if it looks like it was what's called an MP4 audio that got pushed over. Okay. Mara said the instruction was to share audio. Okay. There must have been a miscommunication. So we won't worry about it. It's not a big deal. It'll still be good for learning and for me giving feedback. I'm probably going to need to December-ish to get into those. But again, if you've put them in, I will give you feedback by end of year. Pinky promise. Simon had a question in the Q&A thread, and I want to get to that. And it had to do with the neurosensory exercise, right, Simon? And what I'm going to do, I'm just going to riff. And then if I haven't answered the question in entirety, you let me know. So the neurosensory exercise, and just a reminder, I know you guys are on that level to mastery, but don't forget to stay connected to ground, to body, orient if you have to, do what you need to do to stay really present. The neurosensory exercise where you're with one person one-to-one and you're guiding them for 15 minutes, you might never do that. So the cat's out of the bag. And I say that in all honesty, because it's a practice to practice being with another human and just guiding them, maybe having a dialogue, talking a little bit. It's to practice. It's to get that concept out into the air. And, you know, as someone might say, you know, that old saying, throw spaghetti against the wall, see if it sticks, right? You would do that if you were teaching a class. So for all of you here who can see, you know, the gallery, just take a second and play with me here. Imagine this was your class. You're teaching an intro, a basic neurosensory exercise to a group. You've got all these people doing things, looking in different directions, maybe look at the camera. It would be to... We would guide for 15 minutes, 30 minutes. I sometimes guide for 45 minutes in my drop-in classes. And for those of you that have been to my classes, do I just talk straight for 45 minutes with only exercise? There's moments where I pause, right? I might prompt, what do you notice? Someone might, you know, we might do some chat. I might bring in some theory as to why we're doing orienting. So there's a way to kind of interact when you see more people, but when it's one-on-one, the exercise is really, or was really, to get you comfortable with how you would bring languaging of the nervous system and getting a person to be in their bodies. If you were doing, say, a coaching session, or maybe it's a massage therapy session or a business strategy session, so you might bring in 2 minutes of orienting and, hey, can you feel your feet right now? Like, are they even in your awareness? Oh, I didn't know that. Right. So, the context for practice was to just practice, Simon and everyone. You also mentioned your voice. You said, I'm aware of my voice throughout and how it tended into a default soothing mode. This is partly patterning and partly training. I'm used to varying speed, tone, pitch, and I'm curious whether that would be part of working with people in this method or whether a more neutral tone is appropriate. I'm going to mention a few things and then I'd love to hear from some of you. So it depends on the context. So if I'm wanting someone to really notice their kidneys and their adrenals, and they're deep in the core of the body, and it requires a little more focus and a little more softness, and I would shift my tone based on what I might be working with. We're going to play a lesson in a second where we bring in something called prosody, which is the way that you change your voice. Because if we're walking around doing a bit more vigorous movement, I might be a little more like this. And I'm not going to be all calm, right? So the way of bringing in the different tone, pitch, speed, it really depends on the context. If someone's in a really lull and you know, collapsed, like, I think I'm going to die today state, we're not going to be all perky. How you doing? You know, like that wouldn't be how you would enter it in small. But if someone's really, you know, agitated, and you might meet that to match, to just have them see, oh, they get where I'm at. Does that make sense? So again, we're not trying to hypnotize people, although hypnotherapy has a place. And so some of the lessons that are more quiet, you actually might be more slow and more soft. Does that help, Simon? Does that answer a portion of that question?
It was mainly curiosity, actually, about whether there was a particular context. So yeah, it does answer it. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. David asked, doesn't that just come naturally? David, do you mean shifting gears to the person that you're with? Yes. It might. It really, I would say, and again, this is in that context, if we were in a world where we had no domestication, no industry, no trauma, we would know how to connect naturally. But sometimes there's been a lot of programming in how a mind-body lesson is supposed to be, how guiding someone into their body is supposed to be. That kind of trance, like, Nicole, you and I have talked about this, the yoga voice, right? That it's just the Zen. There's a time and a place for that, I think. But when you're doing, you know, I would like to say, for those of you that maybe haven't done your neurosensory practicum yet, it's just a conversation. You know, it's like, Hey, Rachel, you look a little tired. How you doing? You know, like, or, hey, John, that's quite the cowboy hat you got on. It's looks neat, you know, or, you know, Rebecca, you know, where are you driving? I'm wondering where you are right now. So when you enter in with someone, you also want to have that social engagement. And then if they come back to you and there's like a, if their look doesn't match, or what they say doesn't match their look, it's like, okay, something's going on here. Are they overriding? And so that's where the kind of the detective work comes in a way, which can be fun. So I wanted to share that. Does anybody have any follow-up to that? If you do, put a note in the chat. Carrie said, interesting. I've often found the urge to soothe is hard to resist, but if someone's negative experience was with someone who used a soothing and condescending voice, I observed it being triggering. Yeah. Yeah. You never want to assume that someone needs soothing. because it can actually make them really pissed off. It's like, I'm fucking fine. Why are you trying to calm me down? You know, they might not say that to you, but a wall might come up. And so this is just a preference, but when you might be interacting with people on email, again, this is my preference. I never will say to someone, have a great day, ever. I will never say, I hope you're doing really good today. I will never say that. I will use take care, usually is what I say, or I'll just put a emoji smiley face to make it neutral. Because that is an assumption. And if someone is having a really hard day and you say, I hope you're having a great day, it's so nice out, like, you know, what did you do? Again, from a purpose of, for friends, maybe different, right? But for working with clientele, you want it to be so neutral, so neutral. Again, that's my preference. But Donnie, you got a question. Unmute yourself.
Yeah. So what I'm finding in building more capacity is I'm definitely feeling a lot more, and some of it's mine. And I feel like some of it is connected to collective. And yeah. So the intensity of agitation that I feel is a lot stronger. So for you, how do you, what was your process for kind of navigating, holy shit, I'm way more open than I used to be, and there's so much energy coming towards me, and how do I distinguish what's mine, and how do I distinguish kind of everybody else?
Do you mean like, yeah, do you mean just collective universal energy, or?
Yeah, so if you just think about like all of the different things that are happening around the world, like sure. It feels like I can get caught up in so much of it, right? And it's like, all right, that's not mine, or how do I
set Yeah, I'll speak to that. I think it's a fine dance. So if I speak freely, I used to not think in my more immature state that we could take on energies. Mm-hmm. Okay. That was my science, very, dualistic, Newtonian, cause and effect. I now know for me personally, that's not true. We can take on stuff, all sorts of stuff. And it makes sense because we are telepathic beings and energy is frequency from what I've been learning. So I also think, again, personally, that it's important to know what's going on. But you have to be very tempered in how much you allow yourself. It's not about what you take in, but it's about how it impacts you. Now, the reason I say this, I'll have to find where it is. It was in the Bob Scare book, The Body Bears the Burden. At the each beginning of each chapter, there is a recount of a story that someone told him. And they're really bloody intense stories. You need to be able to hear a really intense story from, let's say, a client and not go into shock. Does that make sense? Because the stories that you'll hear when you open up and you have that capacity to hold big stuff, you're going to hear things that you never want to think about. I'm just being really honest here. And you have to take it in and go, okay, thanks. I'm glad you told me that. And then let's get into the work. These are really like, I'm just going to name them. Cult abuse, satanic abuse, childhood traumas that you don't want to wish upon your worst enemy, accidents where people are dismembered. Peter writes about these in his books. Bruce Perry writes about these in his books. That's why reading is really important for me, because it's a titrated way to hear these case studies and then go, I got to put that down and feel this right now. So how do you take that in and notice it, but not have it stick to you? That's where self-care So that's why the self-care practice was so important for me in this 7 weeks. You need to have an outlet to move your body, move the energy, shift temperature, you know, hydrotherapy, sunlight, grounding, movement, laughing, listening to a comedy show that's just so not correct, but it takes you out of, you know, what you're feeling. Cause it, you know, there will be instances where you hear something or you see something and it really impacts you. And that's okay too, cause that means you're human, but you don't want it to engulf you to the point where you can't make your food, do your work, and need to have a holiday for a week. So, the energies are really fun to play with when you, accept that they're real and you can get fun with it. Like Star Wars. I think a lot of you know that. It's like, I have all these little things in my head, activate force fields, you know? And it's like, that is not going to come at me. I know it's there. I can see it like you would when you have a force field around something, but it's not penetrating my system. Does that help?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. This takes practice too. It takes practice. When I first started teaching Feldenkrais in 2004, I would do a workshop. It was never the classes. I would do a workshop. I would have a headache like crazy. It was because I didn't know how to process the stuff that I was feeling or the people's energies. It was all in my head teaching. So you might find that you'll have symptoms that come up after a session. That is your cue that your whatever wasn't clean, that your guard was down. So listen to those symptoms, right? Are you really irritated and you weren't irritated before? It's possible that you are, again, this is just a personal example. You are working with someone where you can see they need to get angry and they are not getting angry because it's too frightening and you can't push them to get angry. And so if you see that anger and you're like pretending to be angry for them, and then you keep it in, you've got all this stuff trapped in your system. So that's where a practice, like if it's really something intense, you just want to maybe shake your client and be like, come on, get angry. You can't do that to them, but you then go after the session and you do your things to get that energy out. Right. And so sometimes it's not enough just to take, you know, a grounding pause with your feet on the ground. You need to like shake and get angry for them. And you don't say to them, hey, by the way, I can sense you're not getting angry, so I'm going to be angry for you after the session. You don't do that either, right? So you just respect they're not there yet. That's cool. That's not me to fix. It's not me to process their energy, right? If we sat here for another 2 hours, we could, around this topic, we could play it out to how children are. And how being attuned to them and aligned doesn't mean that we as the parents, they have a tantrum as well. We're helping them be with that intense energy and we match them, but we stay regulated in our system and we don't take that on. I'm just going to go to the chat to make sure I haven't missed anything. Yeah, Rachel said, sometimes it feels really manipulative to me. That's probably you were mentioning the way the voice can be. David, I can't handle Joe Dispenza's guided meditation voice. Yes, I have trouble with many folk. You can really tell when someone is truly trauma and nervous system informed by how they speak and guide you through something. Like, I just want to have a conversation with you guys. And then if I slow down, I slow down. Yeah, John said, John McIntyre, this is a huge thing in the psychedelic plant medicine community, protecting oneself against energy exchanges. Yes. Those medicines, and we just dropped a video today with someone who had a really terrible ayahuasca experience. You can get sucked into things that you don't want to when you're that raw and open. All right, Shyla, I'm going to read your comment. Sometimes, not always, I feel like the yoga voice or even therapy voice is a way for the therapist or practitioner to disconnect assume a role, feel safe. Interesting. Yeah. I find the cliche version of that voice has a dissociative quality. Whereas when someone is attuned, embodied, they may take on a similar tone, but it feels more present and alive. Bang, bang on. Bingo. It's the key of, is the voice dissociative, as you said? Is it a little freezy? You know, we can play with this, right? Like, I want you all to take a moment to just notice what's happening in your body. You know, the tone, it's like nails on a chalkboard versus, hey, I want you all to just notice what's happening in your body. You know, it's like an actual inquisitive question. Okay. All right. Any other shares, any other questions on this topic of prosody? If you do, to put in the chat and we'll...
Irene, Jen has her hand raised.
Sorry. Oh, Jen. Thank you.
I wanted to share something related to what you were talking about before.
Yeah.
That for me, part of working people, you know, I think it's Kathy who says, like, the more dysregulated the person we're working with, the more regulation we need to have.
Yeah. Right?
And so, you know, so part of it for me has been, I've needed to sort of realize where I'm at my edge and get help along the way.
Yep.
Kind of do my own work and get help. But what I wish I'd done, so this is a learning I'm sharing, is that I have a client whose activation levels are just like off the charts, right? Mm-hmm. To the point that I was literally one time like almost whimpering after a call.
Mm-hmm.
And in hindsight, right? So my capacity to hold what's happening has grown and grown. But in hindsight, I wish I had just said, this is too much, right?
Yeah.
And just sort of said the gap between where I am and my system is and what this person is coming in with is more than I want to take on. Mm-hmm. And so I just share that because if it happens again, I'm going to do it differently.
Yeah.
And I just sort of thought like, oh, like part of this work is me growing my own, right, ability to do this. Sometimes it's okay to say like too much, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. You're right. And when we want to be in service of those that come to us and we need to make a living, let's be really honest, we need to make money. At the beginning, there's a tendency to take whoever comes through your door, whether it's a real door or a metaphoric door. And there's some value to that because now you have learned, right? There is something about those messy first years of residency. You know, if we think about doctors where it's just kind of a storm of chaos and you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what's upside down and right side up. So there's something about that time that I think if you can play with it, it can be interesting. And you also do need to protect your energy and you need to protect your capacity because there will be some clientele whom their attachment trauma, let's just say, is so severe that they need more than one provider. You can't be the only person for some folks who have severe chronic illness because then you become their lifeline and that's dangerous too. Does that make sense? So again, if someone is, again, this is a bit more advanced, but if someone is really struggling with mental capacity, relationships, they can't work, they're chronically ill. Again, those people, yes, they need to get help, but you have to make sure there's a team. And this is something that Kathy has taught many of us is you need someone, you have to make sure that there's a team of helpers so that you're not the only person that they text when they have a crisis. So that's another thing. This kind of actually bleeds into a bit of ethics that I wanted to touch on. So I'll just touch on it now is it's okay to have really strong boundaries with your time. And while I know we don't like to do contracts and waivers and disclaimers and all that legal stuff, I will say there's something, if you really are going to go into this work and figure out how to do it as a profession, be okay with a legal waiver. I'm dead serious. It doesn't have to be fancy. It can be as simple as, this is our session. This is how much it is. You have to pay on time. The session starts at this time. It ends at this time. If we go over a few minutes, that's my choice. I recommend not doing that. I know some folks can get into the habit of going like past, and then it becomes a habit that the client expects, right? And then your boundaries around, maybe you don't want someone to ever text you. That's fine. Maybe you don't answer any consultation on email. It's when we're in session. So you have to figure out your boundaries about how you work with future folk, because it will really preserve your longevity and the sustainability of doing this work. Think about your GP. You don't have, well, most of us don't have their personal home phone numbers, right? Most of us don't. You can't just ask them a question whenever. You have to book in time, et cetera. So really see how there can be a professional element to that boundary. And that's so healing when it comes to someone working with attachment trauma, right? Getting a boundary and knowing that it's not because I'm mad at you. It's because this is my boundary. Julie, you have a question, and then I'll answer your note about insurance, David. And then we'll get into the next part.
I was thinking, and maybe it's naive belief, that people would come to me. It won't be there is a kind of resonance that I won't have people that I'm not able to handle in a way. But well, I'm saying that it's not a truth, and it's not.
Yeah.
But it feels like there's something like that happening, more or less.
Say that again. So there's a feeling like you'll have folks that come to you.
That I would be able to handle or to take care or to deal with. But of course, this affirmation is not a truth by itself, and it doesn't prevent me to do all the other stuff. But still, I feel like there's always a kind of, you know, resonance, or you don't have, I don't know how to say it, but.
I think I see what you're asking or commenting in that, and I might be wrong, so I'll rephrase, that there is a sense that the people that come to me won't cause trouble. They won't, we'll be able to handle the things that come up. Is that?
No, it's more that I have people, I have the impression that I have people that I have the capacity to handle their trouble or their problem. And I'm not getting people that I won't be able. You see? Do you have
I totally see. I think what you'll need to do is experiment. Mm-hmm. And I will say from my experience, even if in my professional capacity and regulation, I couldn't handle some things that came in because I didn't know what was underneath the rug, so to speak, in their traumas. When I was starting out, I got into a few client relationships that were quite toxic. And it's because I didn't see the signs of things. So I think it really comes down to even having a little bit of a constraint, a little bit of a contract, even if it's verbal or over email, doesn't have to be legal. Then it lets up, because here's the thing, Julie and everyone, if you say to someone, this is my rate, these are how I work, this is how I work. I don't answer on weekends. You know, you can email me during the week. If you send after 6 p.m., you know, all the things, I'm not going to get back to you till the next business. If someone doesn't like that, that's a big red flag. They have to, of course, you know, yes, of course. Then they respect your boundary and your time. It's like a prenuptial agreement. This is a strange thing, but like if someone is worried about signing a prenup, this is what you sign before you get married. Usually it's like, okay, there's a red flag here because we're in this together. And if we split, we split and we leave with what we came with. So there is something about, you never know what might come up when people's traumas start to be worked with. That's all I'm saying. So again, the work is rewarding and beautiful and helpful. And then you just don't know what might be hiding. And they might not know either, right? That's the other thing. I hope that helps. Okay. David asks about insurance. Let's put that into the Q&A forum, David, just because there's a few ins and outs of there. Ask me that in the Q&A forum, and then I'll respond there. All right, I'm going to read what Kay had to say, and then we're going to get into some play. We're going to do a little exercise. So Kay writes, every year my boundaries get stronger. This year I interview your folk before putting them into a training. Send them a questionnaire in advance, one-on-one, so I can triage, that's a good word, insurance and disclaimer you have in place. And you have referral pathways. So what I think you mean there is, Kay, is if you feel that it's not the right fit, you refer people off to someone else that might be a better fit. And that's important. You know, it's not a reflection on you if you're not a good fit for someone that comes to you. It's just, this isn't a good fit. Just like some of us might not like a certain dentist and that dentist is better. And I can tell you the dentist doesn't feel bad when you leave and go to someone else. If they're a good dentist, right? They're like, yep, that's fine. They won't even know that you left. So again, it's not a personal hit. If someone doesn't stay with you, it's just not the right fit. All right. Good discussion. These are important things, I think. Let's just switch gears a little bit. I want to play with something called prosody. Normally, I would teach this in an in-person setting. I learned this via Ilya Marak, who I taught up and down workshops with, and his movement lessons are on SBSM's page. And normally, we would take an hour to do this, but I want to just bring in a little juiciness of it as a way to play with voice, but also boundaries and constraints. If you can stand up and still hear me, I would recommend that. You might need to see me a little bit, but it's seeing me isn't critical. The beginning, I'll have you see me and what I do with my hands. I'll stay sitting just so that I stay in the camera view. Now, the other thing normally with this lesson is we would hear everybody, but my sense is if everybody unmutes, we'll get a lot of bad feedback and interference, so we won't do that. So if you can still see the gallery of folk, just connect with the beings that you see on your screen. Just seeing the spaces, the bodies, the movement that a person might be working with and playing with. And if you are sitting, that's totally fine. But if you're standing, just move a little, even walk a little if you can. Just feel the potency of your posture, noticing your feet, noticing your arms. I promise I won't go into a trance voice as we do this. But at least we can laugh about it. Yeah. You gotta make it fun. So. So this concept of prosody, I don't have a strict definition. You could look it up afterwards, but it's this capacity to have our prose, our speech, shift higher and louder, more certain, or to bring it back and make it softer. And So we want to have in good regulation, this is that ventral vagal element of the nervous system, the parasympathetic, that social engagement. We want to have options in how we turn on our voice box, right? How we shift our speech and our tone. Maybe even feel a bit of a, could say a sigh, like a little ha or ha. Something that just feels good, really influence an exhale. There's no right or wrong. It's just to feel your breath and to make it a little more audible would be the word, a bit more ah, or whoo, or foof, or ah, or something. Even that alone, you guys, if you're working with someone, playing with someone or a group, and you see that there's a shyness to make a sound out loud in front of you or in a group, that's a really strong indicator of where someone is on the safety spectrum. Because you certainly aren't going to get someone to get an angry cry out if it's hard for them to even just, a soft kind of exhale. So again, it's not about forcing someone to express in loud ways, but it goes, okay, this person's prosody and capacity to express is quite thin, right? Their window of expression is small, and that's fine. It lets you know where their capacity is. Then start to bring your hands into your awareness and just see them in front of you. You could look at them. You could say, hello, hands. Hello, left hand. Hello, right hand. If you want to play with me, you can also do this. Hello, right hand. Hello, left hand. Oh, you're a little cold. Just bring them into your awareness. Maybe you touch. Maybe you move. Maybe you squeeze. Maybe you shake. Maybe you warm them up under your armpits if they're cold. And then take your hands and with a very soft but direct movement, bring them to your chest and your solar plexus with the word me. 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 And to actually vocalize me. If your language, first mother tongue is in English, the only one I would know is French, moi. So if you have, you know, your mother tongue, Spanish, German, any language that is more connected to you from your childhood, the word me. And as you bring the hands to the chest, to the core, maybe to the belly, really let the body feel its strength and standing. And also how you can be pliable in your spine, kind of like me, like you really sink and you let, kind of like Jen's example of the snake that can have all the twists and turns in its capacity, right? Like how can you not just be this structure that's really upright and solid? It's not a me, it's a me, me. And feel that connection. And play with your sound. So again, based on what's comfortable for you, can you have it be some smaller, subtle me's? Me. Or do you have an interest in being really loud and like, this is me, me. So feel in your nervous system tone right now what makes sense. And have that me go right through all those cells. Are you orienting? Are you breathing? If you're talking, you're breathing. Well, you're all breathing. That's a given. But can the belly be free? Just move a little. See what your eyes are doing. Me. And then let that me go. Let's just let the arms do the thing that they need to do. Let them hang. And then look around, and you could be seeing someone on your screen, or it could be the wall, it could be the carpet, it could be your coffee mug. You're going to take both of your fingers. I think it's called the second finger, the index finger. And you're going to point outside of you, and you're going to say, you. You. Maybe you point into your camera. Maybe you see Linda on your screen in her blue shirt with pinkish collars on her wrists there. And it's like, you. So it's this you. And the you doesn't have to be a person. It's something outside of you. Maybe it's the light bulb, you. Maybe it's a piece of lint on the floor, you. And if it's on the floor, can you bend? Can you move towards it? If it's up high, can you reach? So to use your body, something that isn't you, but something that is out there. Is there something behind you? Is there something to the left, to the right? You. And then come back to me. Me. This is me. That's you. This is me. And just play with your voice, see how it might change. How quiet can you be, but it still come through clearly? With direction and clarity. How would you imagine yourself, and just play with these back and forth at your leisure. If you were working with someone or with someone, and there's a bit of overwhelm happening, say in them, how can you feel and be like, this is me. This is, and then you. So real distinct boundary. There's still me and you in the same room or in the same energy field over the computer, but this is me. This is me. I am not scared right now, but you, this person, they're having a fear response, and that's cool. And this is me, and that's you. And me and you can be together at the same time. And then just slowly consider this a little dance that you're playing with me and you and you and me. And then make it smaller and smaller so that you sort of come to that closing of this exploration. Feel in standing just what you notice. Internally, with your body, with your posture, with your breath, there's a bit more activity, a bit more movement, vocal cords got used. Was there any emotion? Was it fun? Was it a little awkward? Were you shy? Even if it was just you in the room by yourself, was there a holding back? And then kind of slither back to your chair, feeling your body move. And even just as you sit and see the gallery of people, just take in your peers. And everyone on your screen is a you. You, me. We're together, but there's still a separation. Yeah? So sense this as I'm going to tell you a story. This is why the handout was called The Wing Wants to Fly. Many of you are probably wondering what the heck that means, or the topic for this week, I should say. But as I speak about this topic and bring you into it, just notice this me, you. So again, taking the story in and then feeling it in your system and, you know, even noticing other people, you know, checking out what people are doing as we talk and I speak this out. So, and then we'll open the floor to some chats after. So some of you know this, some of you don't, but I used to be a very active person in the mountains. And one of the things I used to do for about 8 years is I paraglided. For those of you that don't know what paragliding is, it's like a cross between hang gliding and skydiving. You run off of a hill with this massive wing, and then you fly through the air and you use thermals the way eagles do and big birds. And I loved it, but it was also very dangerous. And I was new doing this a long time ago. And I got into it because of my husband at the time, now ex-husband. We met because I was learning how to fly. He was one of the instructors. And so I'm flying one beautiful day in the Pemberton Valley, which is just north of here. And everything was great. Everything was just going nice and smooth with me and my wing. And it was hot, which you want heat. And then I was coming into land at the landing zone in the school field, done it lots of times. And I all of a sudden started to feel this turbulence. You know, when you're on a plane and you feel turbulence, and sometimes it can be really big turbulence, right? There's a reason they want your seatbelt on when you're not moving. And I got rocked like a washing machine. I now know at the time what I hit was a shear layer where the hot air and the cool air are mixing. And it's like this. This was never taught to me by my instructors. And so I'm looking at my wing and it's collapsing and I'm falling and I'm being spun. And luckily, there was a gentleman in the landing zone, thank God. His name was Jim, is Jim, and he was one of the more experienced pilots in the valley. And we're all on radios. So he radios up, "Irene, it looks like you're having a little bit of a ride there." He was humorous, but serious. Yeah? Hope you see where this is coming, where this is going. And I'm like, "What the F is going on?" He's like, "You just hit a little shear layer. Happens all the time. It's a bit intense though, isn't it?" It's like, "All good. You know how to fly. The wing wants to fly. Don't fuck with it." So when you're flying on a paraglider, you have these handles, which are your brakes, and they steer you left, right, spiral dives. You can collapse the wing at your will if you want to not be sucked up into the thermals. And so I know how to do that. He's like, "Your impulse is going to be to stop this thing from happening. Under no circumstances do I want you to pull on those brakes, because that will collapse the wing even more." And it was just kind of understood. You do that, you will fall to your death, right? Because I was probably at about 7,000 feet. So I had to trust his lead as an experienced pilot in this valley for 20 years. I'm like, "Okay, the wing wants to fly." So I literally just had the tiniest touch And I let it fly as I watched it collapse and open and collapse and open. And I spun and I spun. And then as soon as I got out of that shear layer and the air was more neutral, it just flew. And I landed and I was shaking, right? I was obviously fine. I got down. He's a good guy. It's like, hey, you just got initiated. I'm like, oh my God. And so we talked about it. And then he taught me what was going on. And he's like, you did a great job, da 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 da, blah, blah, blah. And that story always stuck with me, because if it had have been my husband on the field, he would have been freaking out. Not because he's a good, not because he wasn't a good teacher. He's a very good teacher, but because we're too connected. Jim was able to put me and who I was aside and just teach. So there's a few morals to this story. One, it isn't a good idea to work with close family members. Doesn't mean you can't help a family member who's having a hard time, just like I would help a friend who's having a hard time. But having a therapeutic relationship that's ongoing can get tricky because you have to maintain neutrality. So that's one part. I know that potential accident didn't happen because he stayed super calm, but he was also humorous. He knew how to engage with me. He's seen it a million times. Just let the wing fly. I also bring this up because there might be times if we're, you know, I know some of you are not in the fields of SE yet or trained therapists, but you work with business with some folks, you know, or maybe your scope of practice is not yet trauma based, but you're coaching people. But here's the thing. You have the language and the lingo and your body is infused in this work. So you will be a beacon that will let another person know it's safe to maybe have a little bit of a washing machine moment, right? So people might start to have intense, intense activation come up in a coaching call, right? Or a strategy session. And this is where, as a general overview of let's just be human, the system wants to come down. It doesn't want to be stuck, high, activated. That makes sense? Like it wants to come down. It wants to fly. Of course, you might need to do a little finagling and figuring out, you know, as you get better at the work, like, okay, this person looks like they really could use a noticing of their feet. Like you see the ground is solid under you, right? You feel like you're spinning, but I'm not going to hit my table because it'll be loud. Like feel that table that you're sitting at. It's strong, right? Feel this chair. Feel your feet. Can you push them into the ground? Can you stomp like you're solid? So there's ways that you get creative the way Jim did with me that day to connect, match with the energy. Wow, you're going for a spin, Irene. He never said, really, you're going to be fine. It was more the wing wants to fly. Let the thing fly. Don't mess with it, right? And so that's where you might see someone who starts doing deep breathing. It's like, okay, I see you're doing some deep breathing. That's cool. But what if you just kept your breath a little more quiet and just really felt the ground under you? Like if you feel that this person actually might need to hit this activation bubble to come out, and this takes practice, that takes attuning and making a judgment on your end really quickly, like, nope, this person needs a deep breathe. That's what they need to do right now. And that's fine. Or, you know what? I think it might be helpful if we stand up and we just feel the body squeeze a little bit. Yeah. So that's my story. When Annalise and I were playing with curriculum development, we were actually sitting in the valley, literally where that happened in Pemberton. So it was kind of full circle, so to speak, to go, wow, I used to be above this. And for whatever reason, I was taught well, and I never got into trouble, even though sometimes I thought I was going to get into trouble. You see, you might have in a moment with someone, oh shit, this is going sideways. You might have that bubble come into your head and then you need to park it and then be with them. And again, that's them. This is me. And trust that their quote unquote wing wants to fly and come down. So that's my story. I'm glad I survived that because I'm here with you all. Deidre said, it's like going with the undertow. Yeah, nature has all sorts of interesting examples for this. The undertow of the ocean, the river eddies, you know, things get you sucking you in and it can be fun to use these examples from nature. Breaking of the sound barrier, yes. So what I want to do is I want to open it up to any shares. We still have time. I want to go through a bit of the self-care work that we've been doing also. But are there any comments, questions, ahas? What was this me, you experience like? So anything goes. And if you do want to comment, say something, you can put just a note in the chat or raise your hand and we'll hear from folks. Julia.
I think David and Donnie were first.
Oh. So
they also have their hands up.
I see that. Yeah. Yeah, and apologize for whatever reason, our Zoom settings, we tried to figure out how I could get you all on my screen, but our settings were odd. So we will figure that out next time. So David, and then Donnie, and then Julia.
Thank you, Julia, very gracious of you.
Yes.
I just wanted to say how really, really great that felt. I think I just have a history of complete enmeshment, you know, with my family where boundaries were non-existent. Mm. So I think I was like, wow, that's so distinctive, like this is me, and just pointing around like that's you, and like that's fine, like there's no, and that's okay. I think that was the biggest thing. There's a boundary there and that's okay. So it was like really strangely, like I felt it came back feeling really, really good.
Yeah.
And I know how that's going to play out because I'm experiencing that with clients. You just put your finger on something that I'm doing with clients and holding the space, and I'm okay if they're going through something. I'm like, I don't have to be feeling what they're feeling. And then although in my family, it was like, oh, you're feeling like shit. Oh, I got to feel like shit now. So it was really, that's just like a really small thing, but it feels like a revelation just to be like, yeah, I don't have to be a mess because you're a mess. In fact, I hurt you if I'm a mess and you're a mess. So it was a really simple exercise, but also really, really profound. So thank you for taking us through that.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be a really lovely way to kind of activate and invigorate your system. Even if you're feeling a little kind of low, mm-hmm. Just the voice, because that brings in the ventral, right? And the movement I think is important with the body and the spine and the feet. And no, it's also what we want babies to learn. Right. When a mother is with, or a father is with their little one, one of the first games that at least I think people I hope play is like, these are your feet. Mm. You know, like you name the parts of the body, and that's how you teach them not just their body, but language and connection. So it's so basic, but yeah, it can be very powerful.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Donnie.
This, Irene, was the missing piece for me. So I think if I think back to kind of my journey with my voice disorder, I worked with speech therapists, voice coaches, singing coaches, ENTs, and they would all have me do and I couldn't do it. And so when I think about titration, when I think about doing it softly versus trying to project, like all of these pieces, I'm now doing the exercises that my teachers or the doctors wanted me to do 15 years ago. And they feel so safe. And it's also like, oh, what else is going to happen with my voice now that I have this education on board? But I recognize like how non-trauma informed acting coaches and voice teachers and physicians are when it comes to helping people kind of navigate their voice issues.
Thank you. Yeah. I just want to make a note. Your voice sounds very different right now. Yeah. There's just a subtle safety that's different I'm picking up. I don't know if you can feel that. Yeah. Thank you. Julia, and then Susan.
In connection to your story you were sharing, it would have been nice, right, if you would have known before that this can happen, that there could be this crazy shaking. And it would have been nice, right?
Sure.
To know this in advance.
It would have.
And I'm always wondering and how much I prepare people I'm working with for these possibilities or possible responses, because sometimes it feels like scaring them. There can come up big, whatever. Mm-hmm. But sometimes because I work a lot with business people and I work a lot with the knowledge pieces right now. Mm-hmm. So, and it really helps to get the first steps into this work. So they get curious and they, ooh, I can work with my nervous system. That sounds awesome. So, and now I'm wondering how much I should prepare them about this work comes from trauma work. And there might come some response. Do you have a tip for me?
I think that, you don't want to scare someone. And education is key. So yes, it would have been great if I had been told that, but you know what? I think if I had been taught that in ground school, when that happened, I don't think I would have remembered, because it was so survival based. And you know, it was a godsend that someone was there helping me through that. So it's kind of this balance between, well, here's another thing, Julia, your clients need to want to learn about it. And that's the part that I think when you front load your marketing, your promotion, your intro calls, however you might do it, trauma, I find, can scare people away, but nervous system, that word is becoming more accepted. And then from there, you open up the dialogue to, and the nervous system holds all of the things that we've experienced. And so, you know, let's just be very transparent that that's your emotions and your memories and old tensions and relational things. And you kind of just sort of like a smorgasbord, you put it all out like a buffet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there might be some of this or there might be some of this. It's possible that in a more business-based setting, you won't get the big, intense things come, but you also might. And so there's also something to be said about just kind of titrating in even your own experiences, right? It was very easy for me to tell you the story about the wing that wants to fly because it's my story. And so that actually leads me to, for everyone, a lot of the topics, the themes of the weeks are personal, you know, like week two is, oh, fuck, this is important, right? What is your, oh, fuck, this is important story that you can tell your audience? Or what's a time when you were feeling like you were being shooken up in the sky, but in a different situation? Maybe it was from an accident or the death of a loved one and how you navigated that kind of thing. So it really is an art to play and practice. Mm. I wish I could say there's one thing, but when you as the facilitator have a very open and regulated, and you don't necessarily say this to your clients, but you feel the energy, anything is okay. everything and anything is okay. Again, to bring Star Wars in, it's got that Obi-Wan Kenobi energy. These are not the droids you're looking for. You know, it's like he's playing mind games and then it softens them. Right. These aren't carry on. So it's that energy of anything is good. Anything can come up. And if it does, we'll handle it.
Yeah.
I hope that helps.
Yeah, that helps. I'm thinking about bringing the trauma piece a little bit later in and just getting them curious about the topic and getting more in depth in it. Can I ask another question?
Let's go to Susan, and then if we have some time, we'll come back.
Yeah. Cool.
Susan.
I'm kind of curious as to my response to the you and me exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I felt very comfortable with it. I was in my body, feeling okay, looking around. Definitely felt the delineation between me and you, and that all felt good. And then I brought my attention to a glass of water on the table. And all of a sudden, I just stayed there and I noticed, okay, something's happening.
Mm.
I don't feel activated. I don't feel fear-based. But I have this enormous throbbing in my solar plexus. Mm. And it was all when I brought my attention to that glass of water. And up until that point, everything else was very fine and very comfortable. Mm. So I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about like what might be behind that that I need to further investigate.
I don't know.
Okay.
But it seems like you have a lot of curiosity around that response. And so it could be interesting after we shift out and you have some time today or tomorrow to just play with that dance again with yourself. And it could be so many things, or it could be something that is procedural that isn't in the top brain memory.
Right. Okay.
And I can't tell you what it is, but there clearly was something there that sparked your attention.
I guess. Okay. So you're really saying it's probably just like a trigger from something that maybe that's not in my awareness.
It could be.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, here, I'll give you a weird example. Maybe when you were three, this is just hypothetical, there was a glass of water that you broke or you smashed.
Right.
Or maybe not.
Right.
Right. So it's, again, these things are really interesting, but if you can come back to this, use the prosody, slow it down, but you said solar plexus.
Yeah.
So that would be an interesting investigation for you to play with your SEP, with yourself, with touch.
Okay.
Like, can you remember that quality?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Irene.
Make it open-ended.
Yeah.
As opposed to something that we're trying to figure out.
Mm. Okay.
Like there is no end point.
Right.
Right. There is no spoon, you know, the Matrix reference. It's there, but it's not there. Because again, it might have nothing to do with the water. It might be the trajectory that your spine was in as you were saying a word.
Right.
And it just so happened that your eyes landed on that glass of water when you were in a certain muscular tone. You see? So again, it's like if someone has trouble, I'm just going to use one of the more blanket terms or blanket concepts. If someone has trouble getting aroused sexually, for example, there is this assumption, oh, there must be sexual trauma. No, it could be something completely different. And so, you know, again, it's like this fun investigative work of back to body sensation.
Right. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I will definitely explore that. Thank
Play
you.
Play with that.
Yeah.
Tamar asked, in your story, you said the system wants to come down and the wing wants to fly. I love the paradox. Yes. Can you explain a little more how this paradox works? So I think with the flying, Tamar, In that case, I was trying to land, actually. I was trying to come into landing. And so when Jim said the wing wants to fly, he kind of meant it wants to fly and bring you down, if that makes sense. So we could say that this, if we think of, if I use my hands, that classic nervous system regulation graph, it wants to come out of high activation. And again, we could speak a lot on this, but you know, if someone is still living in a lot of dysregulation, it's not going to feel safe for them to come down. So this analogy works kind of. It works really well when the system has a bit more regulation and it feels safe coming out of survival, right? Like if someone is really more safe in freeze, you can't force them out of freeze. They have to build enough capacity, enough resource, enough support, all the things, so that tiny bits of safety get dropped in, so that the system goes, maybe we can let a little bit off and a little bit off. And this, I will be honest, it's tough to work with deep, deep freeze with people. I was not an easy person to work with 15 years ago, right? Because there was so much certainty that I was fine. So it is a bit paradoxical, and that it's kind of like window of tolerance. The window of tolerance that Dan Siegel talks about, that is a healthy nervous system. It doesn't apply to a dysregulated nervous system. And that's where Kathy Kane and Steve Terrell's idea of the false window of tolerance comes in. Person is living their life well-ish, but it's under duress of dysregulation. So yes, they're functional. Yes, they're moving through in this tolerance window, but it's false because the pedals are grinding underneath, so to speak. Okay. Anything else? Julie, I know you've got your hand up. I'm going to see, and then we're going to move to some self-care elements. Okay. Fergus.
Yeah, just a reflection, just when you were describing and talking about the relationships in business particularly, you know, that something resonated, and I just wanted to share just a thought that an experience that came to mind with a member of my own staff who has very recently been very activated and very stressed. And maybe a couple of years ago, my response would have been to go up with them and try and problem solve and answer their questions and try and, I suppose, bring them down. And that was a reflection of my own need for safety, nervous system safety. Recently, I've noticed whilst they're still in that state of activation, my position is far more open, far more listening. It's definitely a me and you situation where I'm no longer going up with the activation, able to create the space and allow them to move through. So in a business setting, I mean, everything you were saying was just resonating hugely for me in that sense. I'm really connecting me with the work I've been doing with myself and my own nervous system and how I can bring that into business and any relationship, basically, and be more, I suppose, some more self-care for me enables more space for others to work on their own systems too.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, this all relates to everything, business, family, therapy, all of it. So there's connections there. What I want to do, while I mention Bonnie, where are you? Could you bring that list of everyone into the chat so we have a name call, a roll call, and we're going to go through everyone's self-care. Did you practice your self-care lingo? We'll put that in the chat too. And while we're doing that, Julia, what was your second question?
Oh, it was about teaching a neurosensory exercise in a group. And I wanted to work, I first did the basics and then I wanted to work with the hands. And I could see that most of the people were super awkward using their hands and really moving something.
Yeah.
And that was so funny because, of course, I got insecure and then I just gave some examples what they could do, and they could also do it underneath the table and maybe just touch it. But do you have a tip for that? If people really feel awkward and are kind of in a not freeze, but I don't know, they were not used to use their body and move. That was interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad you did that, because that was good learning on your part. But, you know, this is a deeper conversation. But what I will say, when you have a group that's there for more business stuff and they're not there to like do contact dance improv, I think, you know, and be all free, don't do things that are going to seem weird.
Yeah.
What is maybe more easier for them is to turn to their neighbor and share what they had for breakfast. I know that sounds really strange, but it's a social engagement tactic. Or, you know, what's something funny that just, you know, or what's your favorite XYZ? So sometimes getting somatically in is less about a body part or doing a specific movement, because if they're not used to it, they're going to A, think it's weird, and they won't feel safe. And then it'll put their freeze boundaries up a bit more. It kind of falls into why I would never say, you know, get everyone in a room who's never met each other to close their eyes next to a stranger. First, say hi to the stranger and then maybe have them visualize. So it's how can you find ways to engage them with their bodies where they don't know that they're doing that. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. Keep but playing with it.
Yeah, but it is interesting. But yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I made that mistake a few times in doing things with people when I was young, thinking that they would think that this is really cool. And they're like, the context they have isn't there yet for a more advanced. I mean, I know it sounds strange to just, what, that's just looking at your hands. But if a person has never considered their body and you're having them explore their hands in a group of people, that it will land oddly for them. That's where going outside for a walk, if you can, or something like that, is a bit more engaging than.
Yeah, it was online as well. So.
Yeah. Online's got a different flavor.
Unfortunately, it was not.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Keep playing with it. Keep playing with it.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
You're welcome. All right. We are close. We have 20 minutes, technically. There's 24 of us. I really want to run through everyone having a chance to speak out their self-care project. And Bonnie, if you can put B, you probably just did. Yes. So this is your mission. You're going to say what your self-care project was, and as succinct as possible, it was to XYZ. What was most challenging? What was one insight? Moving forward, I'm inspired to. And actually, we won't, if you feel like sharing your somatic word, you can, but it is one word. Okay. Whatever word comes up. So what your project was, the challenge, the insight, and what you're inspired to continue doing. And then maybe your one somatic word with beta explorations over the last 7 weeks. So the name is up there, the list. Rebecca is first. So everyone keep an eye and just unmute yourselves as we go through. And remember to stay embodied in yourself, grounded, connected with the group. Me, you, go.
Can you hear me okay? So my self-care project was block therapy, and it's working with the fascia system. And the most challenging part was my commitment was to do it in the morning. So sometimes that was challenging getting it done in the morning, but I did do it. I have been doing it every day. My greatest insight was that I brought in all I've learned all my neurosensory stuff into it. I didn't just do it as like a treatment being done to me. And it was very different than in the past when I've done any type of fascial work, much more impactful. And in moving forward, I'm just going to continue to work with it and explore with it deeper. My somatic word for the beta is true.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. So my self-care project was to add cardio to my days, and I selected an Afro-Brazilian video. The most challenging part was there were two things: to do it in days where I felt that I didn't have any energy or had pain in my right knee. The main insights were the value of repetition and improvisation, because when I was in pain, I decided to go for a swim and do something different. And when I thought, oh, I should do a different video, I stuck with that one and I realized the difference in a day that I was in a different state. So it was very different just doing the same thing. And moving forward, my commitment is to keep consistency, keep it simple, improvisation, and the somatic word would be expansion.
Thank you.
So, my self-care project was first cooking healthy for myself once a week, and second, doing activating sports like running. And the most challenging thing for me was that the second part, so the running part, was really felt off from the beginning. I've had a lot of resistance because of my nausea, so I wanted to change. It felt off a little bit. But what was interesting that I just was focusing on the negative part of my self-care project. And what I realized last week, that my first part, the cooking part, went really well. And I even cooked twice a week for myself. And I realized that my days were really regulated and I paused a lot and I had a lot of self-care in my daily life. So in the future, I want to see the little things, what I improved, and I want to be proud how far I came with my nervous system work. So I'm really proud of that. And in the future, I want to focus on titration with the activating sports. I did that once for running. That was awesome. And yeah, I'm curious what will happen. And the somatic word for the SCD beta module is... just right.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Everyone. So my self-care project was around diet and exercise, just like generally trying to feel better than I have been of late. The main challenge I had was that every other aspect of life blew up simultaneously. So it was rather challenging, and I found that self-care very quickly fell down the list of priorities and got overlooked. The main insight I think that I've taken from it is that all of the resourcing was internal. So I was trying to do it all by myself. There was no support. So that's the big takeaway. So in week 7, it's kind of like starting again, and I will push through it. And the somatic words that's relevant to that, I think, is titrate.
Thank you.
Okay, my self-care project was strength training, physical exercise, which I've been neglecting for some time. The biggest challenge is just finding, just getting going and finding something to do. Like, was it going to be the gym? I wanted to do some boxing, home workouts. Also, the challenge was if I had been going to the gym recently, I've just been like working out like I was in my 20s, and I'd get like sore for like so long afterward that I'd just take myself out. It's very frustrating. So my big insight was to titrate so much more, back off way. Like, I even went for a run around the lake on Saturday, and I just stopped halfway. I'm like, I'm gonna walk now, I'm done. And just being okay with that. that's a revelation. Normally I would just grind that out because it's just no pain, no gain, grind it out. Dumbness. I don't know how we do that. So moving forward, I'm inspired to just keep working out, but do so in a very nervous system informed in a titrated way. And my somatic word for beta would be boundaried.
Thank you.
Hi there. So I had two false starts on my self-care project because I already came into beta with a movement practice that I love and that is very nourishing, and I did not want to really change that. So the two things didn't really fly. And then I realized that in my life and my practice and my work, I've had like 1 foot deep into it and 1 foot running away from it. And it's created a lot of stop and go energy. And so I returned to being a student and I stopped running away from myself and running away from this work that I loved and titrating the intensity of it because it's very activating for me as well. And so self-care looked different. It didn't look like physical activity to me. It looked like returning to something that I love. So thank you. And my word is yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
So my self-care project was going back to this exercise form I did 15, 20 years ago when I was in a cult. And my big challenge with that was not pushing through, because that's how you do things in a cult. You're like, push. And I took it really slow. And what I really feel like I understood is how small I have to make things in order to titrate properly. I mean, really, really, really small. Going forward, I think this is going to remain an edge because it's the same postures. I meet it on a different day, and to actually meet that day each time, that's the main thing. And my somatic word for SCD is please.
Thank you.
Hello. What was the self-care project? It was to move through, to be able to get through very invasive medical procedures that I'd been kind of putting off for many years. I take incredible care of myself and I knew I was healthy, but it was all the worry and some of it was literally for 10 years because I was supposed to have done it at least 10 years ago. And so I realized what a weight that was just in all relatives and everybody worrying about me, even though I'm completely healthy. So that was what I was to take care of in my self-care. And it wasn't so much a ongoing self-care necessarily, but more something that was more immediate and needed to be done. But I took it slowly. It took many months to get there. And let's see, what was most challenging, I would say, is advocating for myself and getting my needs met as a patient and having things done the way I wanted them to be done so that I could do orienting, so I could feel comfortable, so that I could, do things in the way that I felt actually things should be done. So I think it actually taught a lot of doctors and stuff because I did it in a very, educated and confident way of explaining why that might be better for a lot of people. And so so that was challenging, but I got through that and that was great. Let's see, what was my biggest win? I have excellent health. And so that was like a huge freeing to know that everything is excellent. And what would I, let's see, moving forward, I would say that I, of course, I'm not going to wait so long. And now I know I can do it and I know how to do it. So, yay. And my somatic word would be freeing.
Thank you.
My self-care project was hiring a personal trainer. And I've been working out with him for now for a month. Originally, when we started, it was going to be 2 days with him and then 3 days by myself. And about halfway through, I realized I didn't want to work out that much, especially because I hadn't been doing much working out to begin with for a while. So I think the biggest challenge was learning how not to override and following my own impulse to say, hey, this isn't what I need, and then communicating that to him and to myself. Moving, I guess the one win would be I am a lot more gracious with myself around different things that I'm learning, and letting the titration process be a lot slower and being okay with that and learning how to accept that. Moving forward, I'm inspired to... I'm inspired to keep working out, but working out in my terms versus using other people's definitions. And my one word is honoring.
Say that one more time, Donnie.
Is honoring.
Honoring. Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, my self-care project was to ground barefoot on the earth every day. What was most challenging was the cold weather, freezing cold weather. One insight or win was deep sensation and strengthening the legs, which surprised me. And I'm inspired to continue. I will continue. And my somatic word is inner worth.
Thank you.
My self-care project ended up being following my impulse. I started with daily movement and strength training, and then protecting and prioritizing my sleep. And then I ended up clearing out my house, and then unplanned fun. So it just kept shifting. The challenge was differentiating between the higher energy I found from doing the self-care and following that, because I worried that it was dysregulation, but it wasn't, which is really delightful. The insight is that this is powerful medicine, and objectively measurable. It actually, my personal business results were 39% higher in October than in September. And that is pretty fun because I don't have to override and force myself to get things done. Mm. That was my timer. Oh. My thematic word is reassurance.
Thank you.
My self-care project was daily naps. And I started with a yoga nidra practice. There were a set of three different recordings I was using. The most challenging was I sometimes was doing it at bedtime, and I really try to keep technology out of the bedroom. So I was conflicted because I wanted the guided audio, but I also didn't want to be falling asleep with a laptop nearby. One win is I drained off some of my sleep deficit and discovered how much I'm juggling all the time. And moving forward, I'm inspired to practice daytime rest, because I think that's the most significant aid, is like having a daytime moment where I'm better rested. And my somatic word is connected.
Thank you.
My self-care project was dialing back my sleep when I go to bed. And I'd say I had different challenges, but I'd say the one that stands out is connected to my insight, which is that, I'm navigating a chronic condition of sorts. And, when I do too much and it flares a bit, then it's like my routines, like my rhythm gets off. And so I really saw, how connected my ability to go to bed or not was, and to fall asleep, because it's sort of like I don't fall asleep. So just the connection between those two things. So I'd say going forward, I'm inspired to really, it's been ongoing work, but to keep really limiting those times when I really doing too much, so that it's sort of like a one way is a positive cycle and one way is a negative cycle. So to kind of keep it in a place where I'm able to keep moving in the direction of more energy and yeah, more consistent bedtimes. And my somatic word is, I'll say,
Thanks, Jen.
All right. Well, my self-care project was about nutrition and mainly focusing on what nutrition, healthy food really is. So I've been doing this quite some time, but I really wanted to dive in to all the demystification of what they say healthy food is and what healthy food really is. So that was quite challenging. What was one win insight? Well, for me, it was doing a lot less because I'm always doing a lot, always looking for new options to grow or whatever. So I realized during this process, without doing anything, I was doing quite a lot. So moving forward, I guess maybe because I know healthy food does a lot, obviously also for me, but just being a little less strict for myself, just having some M&Ms once in a while is not a problem. And I already skipped so many of these unhealthy habits, so I've done quite enough. So that's for me, it's enough. And my somatic word for set beta is confidence.
Thank you.
My self-care project was to walk every day and organize getting myself a treadmill. And what was most challenging for me, if I'm honest, was being like lulled or stuck in some deep-seated freeze in my system. And what I noticed is as I got going and I was walking, I loved it. But it's that breaking of the initial ice, that inertia, is where I got stagnant. So I got to work on that. And one of the benefits of this project is that my imagination and my curiosity has been stimulated about how I really want to live. I want to live with more freshness and more vitality in my body, and I can feel an energetic shift brewing inside me. So moving forward, I'm inspired to nurture and move with this energetic awakening, if you will. And my somatic word is grateful.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My self-care project had kind of two parts. It was working with my core. As a body worker, I have the tendency to sit in a position often, and it was really bugging my low back and a couple other parts of me. So to be mindful of that. And the other part was to work on my core from an internal listening to myself perspective. Because I'm great with that with my gut when I'm at work, but sometimes I don't always do that for myself. And I knew some things were going on. So I found out, or what was most challenging was nothing. I was very inspired. So I just kept doing everything I could possibly do to figure some things out. And one of the things I found out was I do have a weakened thyroid, which made sense of why I kept going into collapse often. Mm-hmm. So that was a big insight. And moving forward, I'm just very inspired. I've been reading all about how to heal a thyroid naturally. And I'm very happy about that because I know I can do it. It's all through nutrition. And my somatic word is is gratitude.
Thank you.
My self-care project was to go to the sauna once a week in town. It's about half an hour away from where I live. And the most challenging thing was just going. It would have been pretty easy to just probably stay at home on the computer and just get my stuff done. But I booked it each day the day before. So by the time the day came, I kind of had to go, or I felt like I had to go. So that helped. As for an insight, it was pretty nice having like a regular break at the end of every week, having that kind of like a ritual aspect to it. It's also cool in the sauna because I can't do anything in there. I'm, you know, naked. There's nothing to do. I don't have books in there. There's just, I can just sit there. Look, I can think, but usually I find myself doing somatic stuff in there. So it's pretty relaxing. And moving forward, I'll probably continue with the sauna, or maybe switch it out, go hiking, or just replace it with something. I kind of like that, being able to change it every week. So yeah, my somatic word for the SCD module is excited.
Thank you.
Hi, my self-care project was to do exercise, structured exercise, to get my heart rate up daily. And the hardest part, the most challenging part, was doing it. and I realized I had bit off more than I could chew. I thought I would just jump rope like 3 times a day for 2 minutes, you know, because like I felt like I should get a lot of exercise, like, oh, like a half an hour a day. And so I thought that was titrated enough, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. And when I finally did, it was after doing other things like dancing or after a walk with a friend and then feeling like I could go into it. So I realized that the engagement piece, like, I needed something even more slow and safe. And so I shifted and I committed to doing my Kundalini yoga and then an invitation in the morning to like then go into the jump rope if I wanted to. And also once a week do a Pilates session with my neighbor. So my win or insight is just titrate. And connection for me is really important when it comes to approaching exercise and moving forward. I'm inspired to keep with the cadence I have and just put those little like invitations out there and like see if it's something that I want to follow. So my somatic word is open.
Thank you. Just to pause. Sorry. I know we're at time. We'll keep going. I can stay on. I know, Annalisa, you might have to jump and some of you might need to. Wendy, we didn't get Wendy. You were after John. So I just want to make sure we don't miss you. All good.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. And then Fergus, and then we'll wrap up soon. So I'm keen. I've got time. So all of us are here until we are. So Wendy.
So my self-care project was to incorporate more movement into my life each and every day. I typically swim laps several times a week, but I wanted to supplement that exercise with a variety of other kinds of movement that would be nurturing to my body and nervous system outside of the swimming pool, stuff like Qigong and Feldenkrais and going for walks outside. The thing I found most challenging was the titrating. I have this tendency to do too much when I get started on something. My win is that the daily movement is definitely helping to shift some stuff in my nervous system. This kind of sounds weird that this is a win, but I've been feeling intensity of the beach balls finding their way out of the pool, and time and regulation has been increasing for me as well. So moving forward, I'm inspired to keep my body in motion as much as I can daily. And my somatic word for the beta is gratitude.
Thank you.
So I've been wanting to move to more of a whole food diet for quite some time and been resisting, I find myself. So my self-care project was to introduce 1 day a week of eating a whole food diet. What was most challenging I found was I went out and bought books. My partner Kay helped there as well, and still was finding resistance, procrastinating or putting off and trying to coordinate the family to agree to a food to eat that's whole food in a day in the week. So that was quite a challenge. What I found most insightful for me personally was the days I did do that, really recognizing the impact that had on my own body. You know, I felt lighter, clearer, certainly that day and the morning after. So really being conscious about the impact of that food I was eating was having on my body. So I'm totally inspired to take that forward, having kind of got through one day a week to try and start increasing that slowly. The somatic word for the SED beta for me is warmth.
Thank you.
Okay, hello everybody. My self-care project was exercise and just trying to move as much as kind of felt right throughout the week. The biggest sort of challenge I had was consistency, which I kind of expected would be the case. But I think through that, the big win that I had in the insight was really seeing the benefits of going from nothing, so to speak, to something, even if it was 10 minutes a day or 20 minutes, you know, a different day. The benefits were very noticeable. And so for me going forward, it was really this question of now realizing that I can do it if I titrate. And the little bits make a huge difference. So that's definitely how I'm going to do, continue things moving forward. And I would say the word would be for me is depth.
Thank you.
Hi. So my self-care project was to go back to my yoga routine that I left 5 years ago. And well, the big challenge is that it's the first thing I need to do as I woke up, and it's tricky. And also because my daughter, she's 3 years and a half, and I've been sleeping with her. So setting a new routine for her to sleep earlier without me, or so it was very connected. And I'm still building back that habit, and it's going through different things that I wouldn't thought. And I love it, like doing self-exploration. I found myself going to the beach and going into the sea, and it's cold. I never do that normally, and I'm not fond of that, but I love it. And also I'm back into a whole nourishment cooking phase, and I love that. I know that. And so it's really nice to really acknowledge the different, the weaving going into building a self-care routine. And voila, so my challenge is the consistency, and I'm really inspired to to continue this weaving with the nervous system regulation principles into setting something new into my life. It really gives me container and foundations. And my word, somatic word, is happiness.
Thank you.
My self-care project was light therapy, like walking with in the sunlight in the morning. And what was most challenging about that was when it started to get colder and more cloudy. And I would say the insight was just titrating that and just surrendering to the fact that I might not want to walk in the cold cloudiness. I can just sit in my SUV and look at the light. I can sit in the backyard on the deck with my coat on and look at the light, and then walk, have my regular walk later in the day. But what I also discovered was that I had a lot more capacity for the cold than I thought I had, or that I had in the past. Previously, when I was in the freeze, cold would really be very activating and raw for me. Whereas now, I can really just surrender to the weather, even when it's raining and freezing. So that was a nice insight. And moving forward, I'm just enjoying spending a lot of time, like hours outside, in the colder weather, and just exploring that. And my somatic word is refreshed.
Thank you.
Okay. My self-care project was doing yoga for hyperkyphosis, because I have neck pain because I slumped over my entire life, and it just creates issues. So my biggest challenge with doing that really was just pure resistance, because I don't like being in my body. I'll be honest, it's really hard for me to get in my body and do anything active. So it's just not giving into the excuses and being committed to that kind of well-being, that physical well-being. So my big win and insight has really been how important it is, because I noticed in doing it consistently how not only did I feel better on the pain spectrum, but when I feel better, I move through my day better, and I just have more positive outcomes with everything that I'm doing. So that ripple effect in my feeling good. And two, I also give credit to, you know, having that accountability partner, because I have the intellectual understanding how important my well-being is, but I never really had that integrated understanding, and being able to talk that through with my partner really helped me understand it in this real raw way that I never did before, just from that cognitive standpoint. So I'm inspired to just continue. I'm feeling very committed to a regular daily practice, just something small. I could just walk for a half an hour, as long as I'm doing something to put myself physically in my body to feel good. Yeah. And my somatic word for the beta module is fulfilling.
Thank you. Thank you. I think the key word out of many of your shares was the T word, titration. And it bleeds over, it parallels into how we might work with someone in the future. So again, there's something about putting ourselves into a challenging situation and not going all out and noticing the benefit of small little doses. I remember seeing, this is a meme, but I'll share it, or it was a share on something online, that there was a gentleman who needed to lose quite a bit of body fat. And he went to the gym every day for 5 minutes. Literally, that was it. The process of going there and only working out for 5 minutes, and over a course of, I think, a year, he lost 20 pounds. So again, it's not always about that, but that commitment, the health, the shift, the movement, the food, the light, the rest, all of it comes in. And so when you have that understanding for yourself and how it might be a struggle for you and how you overcome it, that gives you more insight in how you help others with their titrations, with whatever it is they might be working with. So wonderful shares. Keep going with this. For the sake of time, I am going to close by just really thanking the energies that brought us all together in this moment, for whatever universal reasons we're all here now. And I know a few folks have left, but if you're listening to the recording, there's been a lot of work, a lot of teaching, a lot of training, a lot of organization, whether it's in the last year, but also all the mentorship that I've had. I will thank all of my teachers who've come through my world. So I honor them. I'll encourage us all to think of other teachers that you've had who have gotten you to this point, whether it's a professor or a therapist or whatever it might be, whoever it might be, to just really honor those that came before us. I want to thank my team, Anna, Lisa, Nicole, and Bonnie, and then of course the others that none of you have probably seen, who have worked on back end stuff and our handouts and all those things. So thank you to all of those who help this work and run. And, you know, I think the main thing is, one, I hope that we keep working together in whatever way that might be, whether it's through the next few bonus sessions or a full training, or if I just see you on the SBSM calls. I know some of you have been hanging out on the training calls or maybe Seth's calls. Just really use the resources that you have. Keep practicing. I will keep practicing. And my intention for all of you is that you follow your impulse in the path that you're meant to be on. How that looks, only you know. But to bring the principles in, to have fun with them, to be serious, but not always serious. To bring humor in when you can, to move, to take care of yourselves, to play boundaries, right? What we played with today. And I encourage everyone here to set your intention moving forward for this work. Maybe that's already in your field and you know what that is, or maybe it's a question mark and you have to work with it a bit. To be very intentional with how you move forward, whether it's with me or with other teachers, right? As a reminder, just to again, give us the feedback, as I mentioned at the beginning, we'd love your feedback. And I am really looking forward to diving into your practicums. Those are going to be fun. And what I'll probably do for the sake of simplicity is when I do give you feedback, I'm going to voice it so that it's a bit more socially engaged. So watch out for those and use our forum. So that forum that's on the site, talk amongst yourselves, tag people. So if someone isn't tagged, they won't know that you're asking a question. If you want to get my attention, tag me. Happy to answer your questions, and we'll keep you informed with future happenings and future trainings. And hopefully we can all come together at some point together here in Canada. It'd be great to have all of you, and we can do some workshop and play. So if you can unmute yourselves, we'll do a little goodbye. Go and play and learn. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Yes. Bye. We'll see you in a couple of weeks for those joining the extra sessions. All right, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
You're welcome. Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much.